Sorry for the technical difficulties tonight with our intro music. My name's Jody. I'm the founder of The Missing Voice. We have a show tonight covering Leroy Peter Hargrave Jr. He went missing in Savannah, Georgia. I'm going to bring on my co-host, Donna McIntyre. Donna?
Yeah.
All right. I got you in here. Now we're going to bring in Leroy Hargrave's mother, Melody. Melody?
Uh-huh.
Okay, we got you.
Okay.
Okay. Melody, tell us about your son. You know, tell me about us as a person and what he enjoyed doing, and then lead into what happened to cause his disappearance.
Okay. My son was a very good-hearted person. He always has had his kids with him, but he had a drug problem, and he was going to seek for help in South Carolina at Cornerstone. And when he got there, he went by bus up there. When he got there, the man that owned the place went to go and get him and went to bring him to the facility, but he got a call saying they had drugs in the facility, that they would have had to clean it out. So they didn't take him there. They wound up taking him to Tennessee for a couple of days to raise money for the facility. And then when they came back to bring him there, they still had the drugs in the facility. So they brought him to a homeless shelter. He stayed in the homeless shelter for about 2 weeks, got a job with this contractor man and this real estate man. And some kind of way, the contractor man and the real estate man had got into a realm because Leroy wasn't paid. And he wound up, the realtor man said that he felt sorry for my son, so he was going to go ahead and give him a place to stay and let him do the work in the house and pay him a little bit of money and leave the lights, water, gas, and cable on. But he didn't tell me he was going to move four other people in there. When he moved the four other people in there, two of them were from prison, wanted for murdering somebody, and one guy was a gangster guy named Ghost, and the other guy was named Red, was a street guy. And they stayed with him, and when we went up there to go, whenever my son was not calling me and stuff, I was getting kind of worried because he wasn't calling me, because he would call me every day. And May the 11th of 2017 was the very last day I heard from my son.
So when he was going to the rehab center, you said something about he was trying to get money to stay there?
He was trying to, they was trying to raise money for the facility, to make money for the facility to keep the facility running, because they would cook food and stuff for different, fairs and stuff. And they would raise money for the facility.
Okay, who would raise the money? Because I'm a little confused.
Cornerstone people. The Cornerstone workers and stuff. But they would bring the people in.
They were trying to maintain it?
Yeah, they would bring the people in the rehab to raise the money.
I guess I'm a little confused. What was it, not government funded, or was it just on a voluntary basis for this facility?
I have
if
no idea if it was government funded.
Well, yeah, I'll check into that, because if it's a rehab center, you would think that it would have some type of funding or 501 or something. I mean, I don't never hear of a rehab center that has people to come and do volunteer work and do fundraisers to keep it open. That's just
All I know, they took them to Tennessee and they were going to raise money for the facility. As far as what they do with the money and what they do with it, I have no idea.
So you said they got caught with drugs at the facility?
Yeah. They had drugs in the facility. And that's the reason why they didn't want to bring him over there, because he was trying to get off the drugs. You know.
They have, you know what, they have several facilities around the United States. They have, in fact, Cornerstone of Recovery has an addiction treatment center right in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if this one, Jody, was just one that was using that name that really wasn't incorporated with the ones you're talking about. I've just never heard of one having people to do fundraisers to keep the door open.
Me neither. But
I know one of the men that was working there, one of the men that went, I want to say that went get him from the bus station to go, when they went to go to the rehab, one of them quit after that happened. He is no longer working there.
Well, when we're done with the show tonight, I'll get the address and stuff on that, because something just doesn't sound right with that whole facility.
I know. I know, that's what I said. From the beginning, it was just so many things unanswered. I mean,
it's called Cornerstone Treatment Facilities Network.
Uh-huh.
And they accept Metro Plus Health Plans, Empire, United Healthcare, Health First. It's an employee-owned company.
How long's it been in business?
I'll do some more research. You can talk to her, and I'll do some more research.
Okay. Okay. So you said that the guy took him to Tennessee, and then they put him in a house, and he didn't know that they was going to move people in that had just gotten out of prison.
They went and they brought him to the homeless shelter first. He stayed about 2 weeks in the homeless shelter, and then from the homeless shelter, he wound up meeting the contractor man and this real estate man, and he started working. I'm pretty sure it was for the contractor man he had started working for, but they were doing the job for the real estate man. Some kind of way, the real estate man and the contractor man got into it. And the real estate man, he didn't live in Savannah, Georgia. He lived in, he lived out of town, like out of state. I want to say it was Jamaica or something. I got it all written down. God. But the man didn't live there at all. He would just come periodically, you know. And I guess he was fixing the house to rent it out or to sell it. I really don't know what he was going to do with the house. But whenever he seen that the contractor man didn't pay my son, he just felt sorry for my son.
Mm-hmm.
And he told my son, he said, well, look, he says, I'm going to go ahead and give you a place to stay. He said, I'll pay the lights, water, gas, and cable and everything. And when you're going to get yourself on your feet and everything, he says, you know, then you could go ahead and get another place and all to stay. But he says, as far as right now, he said, just stay here and live here. But the man didn't tell him he was going to move the four other people in there with him. And the four other people, like I said, two of them were getting out of prison, murdering somebody. One of them was a gangster guy named Ghost. And then the other guy was named Red.
So this is a realtor guy that's moving extremely bad criminals into a house?
Yes, he did. But
wow.
he don't no long the realtor do, no longer has the house anymore. And all these four people that lived in the house, we don't even know where they at. We don't
what
know.
What does law enforcement
it,
say about all this? What have they told you about
okay.
it?
This is the thing with the law. Okay, they put them missing in Houma, Louisiana, you know, missing in Savannah, Georgia, whatever. But when we went to go and put the flyers out on for TV and everything, we went to go put it. Well, Terrebonne Parish at first was trying to stop everything we was trying to do. But then when I talked to Mr. Mike Soleil, which he was a captain, he went ahead and he okayed everything. So they put it on TV that night saying that he, you know, that he was a missing person. But Georgia never had a missing report, person report. Terrebonne Parish had a missing report on my son. But Georgia does not have anything on my son. So it's like whatever they called and said to the cops up there and whatever I said, that's what they got. And that's it. None of, and they telling me that it's not their jurisdiction, you know. And my son lived in a physical address up there. So I don't understand why I didn't take no police report at all up there at all.
Well, on his case file in Namus, they have the police department's phone number is New Orleans.
New Orleans?
Yeah,
no.
That's what the area code. The area code is Terrebonne Parish Sheriff's Department, and the detective that's in charge is Chief Detective Malcolm Wolf Majors.
No, Malcolm Wolf is at Terrebonne Parish Sheriff's Office. Where they have the missing report, where they have the missing report in Houma, Louisiana.
Yeah, it's in Louisiana, but it's in the Oregon area.
Yeah. It's supposed to be
which
in Terrebonne
Parish. Which is really
kind of
odd because they have him missing from Savannah, Georgia, but they have him listed in Namus as Louisiana. So I
And you see, all that confuses me, and really the cops never did anything for me as far as trying to help me, to help find them and everything. They never did nothing for me, nothing. I mean, I was at my last rope trying to find ways to be able to put the word out for my son, you know. Trying to have closure, at least something.
Well, have they
what
said
I don't
anything
understand.
To you about any foul play that they believe is involved?
No, they never told me anything, nothing.
Okay. So you don't have a detective that gives you any updates or
no,
that you can call and ask?
No, because when Houma. When I go to Houma Police Department, they tell me it's out of their jurisdiction. And then if I go to Georgia, they would tell me it's out of their jurisdiction. So it's like I don't have no answers whatsoever from either one of
them.
Well,
it's because they have him listed as missing from Georgia, but they have his case being taken care of in Louisiana, which...
Mm-hmm. It don't make no sense to me, though, really.
Okay, so was he in Louisiana when he was staying at that place, or was he in Tennessee?
No, he was in Tennessee. Until they went ahead and they went to go bring him back over there to the homeless shelter, which was a... South Carolina, but they still had the drugs in the facility, so they wind up taking them to the homeless shelter. And there was another thing too, because he would smoke a lot. They didn't want him in the facility because he smoked.
Yeah.
And he couldn't be in the facility with smoking. So they had an issue there, you know, too.
Yeah.
Mhm.
Okay, so I know I'm going to repeat myself, but I'm trying to get this down. Was he originally living in Georgia, and then he was going to the rehab center in Tennessee?
No, he,
was that what the game plan was?
No, he lived in Houma. He was living with me. He
okay.
got a bus and went up there to, he had to catch the bus. The closest place was to bring him to Tennessee was Savannah, Georgia. So he got Savannah, Georgia by bus. The,
okay. And do you know how long he was there?
The guy that owned the place went and was going to bring him to the facility. From Georgia. But
it was in the middle of the night.
Huh,
Did he have an address in Georgia?
Yes, he did.
Okay, that's why they have him listed in Georgia then.
Mm-hmm.
So how many states did he go to before Louisiana took his case over? Georgia, Tennessee?
I want to say two. Until the third one, it was three. He went to South Carolina, then Tennessee, then Savannah, Georgia. Because my brother had passed away on the 10th. We went to go to the wake that night, and the next day they was going to bury my brother, and that's the last day I heard from him.
Okay, so that was on May 11th.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, he did try calling on May the 12th, but he didn't dial the 985. He only dialed the 872-1200.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't dial the area code, so he could not get in touch with me at all.
Yeah.
What type of work did he normally do?
He would do in and out jobs. If he didn't have a job, he would do in and out jobs like painting, plumbing, cutting grass, anything to really make money. If he didn't have a job, he just tried doing anything. But mostly it was plumbing that he did down here, you know, because he worked.
Yeah,
with
he
a plumber
lived with
down
you. You
here.
Said.
Ma'am.
You said he lived with you?
Yeah.
So had he ever went to a rehab center prior to him going missing?
He did go to a rehab. It was in several times he went to rehabs, and I brought him there, and I went to pick him up. And he would do his whole 30 days or whatever he had to do. He was even in drug court. He had to go to drug court for almost 3 years, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
He did drug court for Terrebonne Parish. He did everything that he was supposed to do here.
Yeah.
It sounds like he just wasn't able to stay focused, to stay off the drugs. Maybe it was because of the inner circle that he ran with. What was his drug choice that he did?
Heroin.
Okay.
Now, before, it had just started off, like, with pills.
Yeah.
Then it went, you know, further and further and further. But it was kind of his kids' mom, she was doing them. And then she wound up getting my daughter hooked on it. She wound up getting her sister hooked on it. And from there, friends, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So she
well, the
did
bad
a,
thing about the drugs is that they start out with something mild, and then when they get immune to it, they just keep going up the ladder to the more rougher stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
it
I saved.
To the point where they don't get the fix off of it, so they got to go to something
else. I saved him like twice, and I saved her like three times from dying on me.
Hmm.
It's really sad when they get involved in that, but you have to do everything you can to help them. You can't just disregard them because they've went down the wrong road.
No, and you know, it took for us to really, like, put him out for a little while, you know, because he was starting to push on me and hit on me and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't handle him. My husband would see that, so he wind up taking and, you know, just saying, look, this is enough, you know, and we had to throw him out. And then when he came to come back, well, he told me, he says, I know y'all not going to take me back in y'all house. He said, not before I go get help. So that's the reason why he wanted to go get the help.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it sounds like he was probably at a point to where he could have possibly been mixing other stuff with the heroin. And some of it, you know, it takes your personality to a whole different level to where you can become violent. Your depression gets more, you withdraw more from people.
And that's pretty much the point he was in, you know, he just, he had enough to, you know, of hurting us because he seen what we, you know, we had done and we was going through and things like that as a family, you know.
Yeah, that's typical, though.
Yeah.
That's typical.
I mean, I was going through enough already because I had lost my dad, my mom, and my daughter within 3 years, you know, and then this happened. And then my ex-son-in-law, my daughter's ex-man, came and took the little girl from me with no warning, no saying, nothing. He just came to get her with at school. She was at school that day, and we never seen her since. It's 3 years that we hadn't seen her.
You've been through a lot.
Yeah. And I wind up with PTSD and bipolar and depression, you know, different sets of depression that I fell in, you know, but they said it was because I've been through so much within the 3 years, well, really the 4 years, that, you know, they surprised I'm still here. Really.
I can't even imagine everything that you've been through.
When me and you spoke, you told me that you had visited a place that was right off the, tonight you told me it was right off the exit, but when we were talking, you said that you had went to this place that the guy had alligators.
Yeah, that was the alligator.
Now, was it like an alligator farm, or was it just a guy that privately owned alligators?
I think it was the guy that owned the alligator pit, but I think actually he might have something to do with it, because this guy was so weird. I mean, he was just weird, because he actually came to our car and he told us that people would pay him money to put dead bodies in the alligator pit to where nobody would never find them. And this guy came with a machine from out of nowhere. He came and he asked us, he said, what are y'all doing on this property? I said, you know what? This could be my son laying right here, you know, because we have found some torsos, you know, some bones. And I said, this could be my son right here. And it just kind of like, I was nervous. We was all nervous. All four of us women were nervous. I'm not going to lie. We were. Because we didn't know what we was going to be walking into, you know. But the guy came with the machine and just scooped up some mud on the opposite side we were. It was on the left-hand side, but it was kind of like on the, it was on the left-hand side that in the corner that he picked up that mud. But they could have very well had a dead body in there, you know, in that mud right there. Because we've seen a lot of bones. We've seen a lot of bones out there.
Did you address what you've seen out there?
Yeah,
Did you address what you've seen out there with the police?
Yes, I did. And actually, they had called the man with the company. He's the one that called the sheriffs. And they came, with the MacGyver dogs and everything. And they had told us to go back to the motel, you know, because they wanted to see themselves, you know. But a lot of times they say if it's gang-related or drug-related, if there's the law, you know, if it's the law that goes there, they scared that the gang members are going to retaliate against their family, so they don't say nothing, you know. It is just a tough, tough thing. And it's
Was your son ever known to be gang-related or gang-affiliated or have any friends that, you know, was part of a gang?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. Not that I know of. I mean, the only time I knew that he hung around with the gang member was up there, that guy named Ghost or whatever. That's the only thing I know.
Did you ever contact or get in contact or find out who the realtor man was or the contractor was?
Well, okay. On his phone records, he had some of the numbers on there. Either if it was drug related, the man, I can't think of his name right now because I don't have the papers in front of me. But he was the contractor man. And then the real estate man was named Mr. Nick. And the numbers I got has probably changed by now. But he's the one that sold the house.
Mr. Nick?
Mr. Nick.
Let's
see.
You know, did you ever talk to Mr. Nick?
Yes, I did. He's the one that actually called me and told me that he had sold the house.
But my question is, was Mr. Nick able to, does he let these people move into this house? Was he able to give you any information, like their name?
No, he just knew them by their, like, street names or whatever.
You know what? Later on tonight, when we get done with this show, send me Mr. Nick's phone number and send me that contractor's phone number, because we're about to find out who these guys were.
Yeah,
okay,
because if that gangbanger, Mr. Gang Boy, was fresh out of jail or prison, 10 chances one either had a probation officer or a parole agent. And normally, it's my experience, and I've seen it, if they pull up a lien and they put in the nickname.
Okay. I have the man's name. His name was Mr. Bruce, and his company name was Perfection Renovator. And the number that I have, the phone number that I have.
No, I don't want you to put the numbers on my show. No, I don't want the numbers on my show.
Okay.
We can get the numbers from you afterwards.
Okay,
because
and
that,
the
that
man's
actually
name.
Put you, Yeah, you don't want to jeopardize giving that information
out. And the man, Mr. Eli from Cornerstone, that was the man's name for Cornerstone.
Okay.
Let's see.
Do you have a contact name for an officer that you dealt with there in Savannah, Georgia? Or, you know, what about...
Teresa Miles. She was the one that I talked to mostly.
Miles,
M-I-L-E-S.
Now, is that in Georgia or Louisiana?
Savannah, Georgia.
Okay.
Now, the detective in Houma is Mr. Major Wolf. Major Wolf, his name is.
Yeah, we've got that information, but I want to talk to the realtor man.
Uh huh. Now his name was Mr. Nick, and I do have his number somewhere. Okay.
Yeah, we'll get that after the show. But these guys, let me see if he's got a Facebook page.
I don't know. There were so many things that was just unanswered and, undone. I mean, it's like, it's a case. It's going to be very hard to solve. And
well,
I think the first thing you need to do is to be able to track from Georgia with the names that he hooked up in each state that he went to.
Now, you see,
to try to come up with a paper trail.
The street name of the house, because I have the picture of the house in front of me, it was 2115 Hardin Street. And I have pictures of the inside the house and of the outside of the house.
Yeah, I wouldn't publicly tell that, though, because you don't want to put yourself
just
at
let
risk.
It go.
Because as far as the street names, the guys that was in prison that got out, it's not that hard to find out what their street names is. If you go and look up, you know, their sentence and stuff.
Now, right after that happened with Leroy, they had a drug bus, a big old really drug bus over there, and two of the guys, my little niece was telling me, two of the guys, his names was on that drug bus, but I just can't remember what date it was or whatever.
Yeah, there'll be all the documentation from the major drug bus.
Yeah, but they had picked up like 30
people. Like if they bust a bunch of people with meth,
And
they've been people that what they wanted. Once they get them, they're letting you know who their names are.
But they said my son wasn't in that, you know.
Well, that's good.
Because they had told him that he had left, like, before that all happened.
And this is in Savannah. I'm just doing some research. I like to do research while we're doing the show. Okay.
I'm trying to see if he's in the Charlie Project, Jody, because that normally gives you all the information a little bit more than what the Namath does, because you can't go on the Charlie Projects until you've been missing for over a year.
Well, I found our little renovator.
Using that authority to inspire other powers and to interfere in our election. So this is suggested. I will just close my remarks as I
And he worked for this contractor, right?
Yeah, contractor.
Okay.
Now, what I did, because I did call the contractor man, and he had told me that he had paid Leroy some money. You know, but of course Leroy told us what he wanted us to believe. You know what I'm saying? He wanted to make, like, everything was good. Make it sound like everything was good when it wasn't.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Well, that's just typical when they're involved in the drugs, because they like to hide a lot of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so he did some work for this gentleman in Savannah, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
Did this gentleman know that he was with Cornerstone? Did he know that he was with Cornerstone? Did he know anything about Cornerstone?
I really don't know if my son told him anything about Cornerstone. I really don't know.
So, but yeah.
He met this contractor man like right after he went. Well, I think while he was in the shelter, he met this contractor man and the real estate man.
Yeah, probably
okay,
did.
So they took him to Tennessee to do some work for him, and from Tennessee he ended up in a shelter in Savannah, Georgia.
Savannah, Georgia, right.
What transpired for him to go from wherever in Tennessee to Savannah, Georgia? What transpired for him to go into Georgia instead of, you know, because Cornerstone does
Mr. Eli is the one that took him there to the homeless shelter there from Tennessee. I think they were going to go back at the facility, but they still had the drugs in the facility, and he said with my son smoking the way he did, he couldn't have him smoking in there. So that's one of the things that kind of confuses me right there. You know, I mean, I know because my son was a heavy smoker. You know, I know my son was a heavy smoker.
What did he smoke, cigarettes or pot?
Cigarettes.
So they said they couldn't have him there at the facility because he smoked cigarettes?
Right, uh-huh.
Well, that's because there's a lot of regulations depending on the state.
I know they have a lot of rules and stuff. And
yeah, well, the states will have them. You can't, like, you have to be 8 foot away from a building in the public.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because I know a lady that went to a upscale rehab in Florida, and on one of my trips to Florida, I stopped in and visited with her because she is from Michigan. So I stopped in and seen her, and to look at what these facilities put on the internet for you to observe and look at, like their high scale, like this one, you know, had chefs that cooked 5-star meals for you, blah, blah, blah. And when I went and seen her, where she was living didn't look nothing like what they would have you perceive. You know, so my thing is they're saying, okay, we can't have him because he smokes too much, but he could smoke outside. He could smoke away from the building. Why would that stop them from helping an addict get clean? you would think maybe if he's there for that kind of addiction, maybe they could help him with the addiction to the nicotine.
Yeah.
See, what I don't understand is if they were complaining about his smoking of cigarettes. Well,
the man even told me that he bought cigarettes for
they
him.
Had
the man
drugs
even
in
told
that
me
facility.
That.
They had drugs in that facility. So you mean to tell me they were more worried about a chain smoker of cigarettes than the drugs being brought into their facility? And not only that, but if they was in Tennessee, they have facilities in Tennessee. Why didn't they take him to that facility? Why didn't they check him into that facility?
Like I was thinking, you know, they even could have sent him a bus ticket back home. If he didn't want to be there, we could have put him somewhere else. You understand what I'm saying? And my friend's son was, like, he was flabbergasted whenever I told him that, because he said, Miss Mal, he says, I could have took and made sure Leroy would have been in a place that he would have been taken care of, you know. But them sending him to a homeless shelter, that wasn't the thing to do. Because, I mean, they should have sent him a ticket back home. Or they could have got in contact with me and say, well, look, Miss Melanie, you know, they had drugs in the facility and your son can't be here. You know, I would have understood, you know, but I would have got him back home.
Did they take the drugs there or was the drugs already there?
No, the drugs was already there, the way I could understand.
Oh, okay.
This happened in the middle of the night. Whenever the man called me, he called me like the next morning and told me that he was going to take Leroy with him because it was kind of late in the morning whenever he got there in Savannah, Georgia. And the man, Mr. Eli, went to pick him up, like I said, at the bus station. When he went to pick him up at the bus station in Savannah, Georgia, he had told me that they had drugs in the facility, so he couldn't go there. And that they was going to bring him to Tennessee the next morning with them to raise money for the facility.
For the facility
I can't
that already
take
had
you.
The drugs in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. I can't take you to the facility, but I'm going to take you and let you earn money for us. But I can't take
mm-hmm.
you to the facility. There's drugs there, and you're a chain smoker. And so, therefore, I'm going to take you over here and work you and make money off you. And then I'm going to take you over here. Why not put him on a bus ticket to go back home?
It's just so much stuff, y'all. That's just unanswered and unsaid. I really don't.
Well, I just said... I just sent a message to the Perfection Renovation owner
mm-hmm.
asking if he would please contact me. I'd like to talk to him. And I told him in reference to who. I told him
uh-oh.
I was a missing persons advocate and I'm doing research on a case and I would like to I would like to speak with him. And I gave him my office number, and hopefully he'll call me. I gave him I even gave him my website.
I mean, that guy was really nice. He really did talk to us, you know, me and my daughter, the two times that we did call. Because we was trying to find out. Because we called every last number that he had on his phone record. We called every last number. And mostly, like I said, mostly all of them were either drug people or work, you know, doing work for somebody.
Oh.
Okay, what was it?
Well,
what was the name of the drug facility? What was the name of the drug facility?
Cornerstone. Cornerstone.
Okay, Cornerstone.
Let's see, and I do have Mr. Eli's name and number if y'all need it.
Okay, well, don't put it on her.
Yeah, don't put it on her. We'll just, you can message that to me on Facebook. Do you remember the name of the real estate company that the realtor had?
No. The realtor is the one that bought the house. And it was a 2115 Harden Street. That's all I know.
Yeah.
But his name was Mr. Nick.
Yeah.
Now, whether that, I don't know if that was his first name, but I know the name that came up whenever he called was Fatima Trahan.
It was what?
The name of it. Fatima Trahan.
Will you send that to me and my messages later?
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going through some of the stuff for the center.
Yeah, they could have taken him. They could have shipped him to any other center.
Yeah.
If they had drugs in that center and they didn't want to take him there, they could have shipped him to the one in Knoxville. They could have shipped him to the one.
And that's what I don't understand, why they didn't send him anywhere else. Why did they have to send him to that facility, you know what I'm saying, to the homeless shelter? Why did they have to do that?
What was the town?
You got a name of that
on the facility?
The name of the facility was Cornerstone of Hope Recovery Center, and it was on 1942 Tass Parkway, Seabrook, South Carolina.
What city?
Seabrook, South Carolina. And they had three guys that was working there. It was Mr. Eli, Malcolm Thomason, and Jay Turner. And it was Mr. Jay Turner that is not there anymore. Now, the day he got there was March 4th, and he left. They claim he left March 12th.
Okay. He got there
I
March 4th,
everything down.
And he left
he
there
left
March 12th.
March 12th.
Okay, so he left the facility on March 12th.
And that's when they took him to the homeless shelter. That day.
And so, wait a minute. Where was he staying at when he was in Tennessee?
With one of the guys that brought him there. I'm not sure if it was Mr. Eli, Mr. Jay, or Mr. Malcolm. It's one out of them three people, but I don't remember which one.
Do you know where they stayed, or by chance?
No. One of them, I think, stayed either in Savannah, Georgia, or in South Carolina. One of them, because one of the men that we pick him up at the bus station took him at his house that night.
I'm confused. So they took him from South Carolina, from the facility in South Carolina.
No.
They took him to Tennessee.
From Savannah, Georgia, at the bus station. They picked him up there. The man brought him to his house. One of the men brought him to his house. And the very next day, they took him to Tennessee. Because he said that they had drugs in the facility, that he couldn't take them there because they had the drugs.
Well, maybe what we need
so
to do,
so he never
Jody
even made
is
it to the facility?
No, not that I know of.
He never
Maybe what we need to do is try to do a private phone call that we can go through to make sure we're not missing anything and record it. And that way his mom won't get so confused.
Right, because I can't understand why he would only take a bus to Savannah, Georgia, if the facility was hundreds of miles away in South Carolina. Why would you get off in a bus in Savannah, Georgia, and go all the way up?
Cornerstone is the one that told him to take the bus to Savannah, Georgia. It was one of the men that worked there. I don't remember which one of the men it were, though. It was either Mr. Malcolm, Mr. J, or Mr. Eloy. Either one of them three. But I know that one of the men brought Leroy at his house that night, because that's when he called me that night to let me know that he made it there in Savannah, Georgia, and that he couldn't go in the facility that morning because they had drugs in the facility, because the man had already got the call saying that they had the drugs in the facility. So that's when the man decided to take him to Tennessee with him.
Okay. Listen, we're almost out of time. We only had an hour.
Okay.
We got 8 minutes and 8 minutes left. What I'm going to do, Melody, is I think I'm going to get with Donna, and me and Donna both are good at doing some research.
Okay.
And like I said, I reached out to the gentleman from Perfection Renovation.
I'm sure if y'all call at Cornerstone, one of them could tell y'all whatever happened, you know. But I know the man that did leave, you know.
But they're not going to give us all the information because of the Privacy Act. So what we need to do is just research,
see if we can
find out how they close the facility down, what information was given for it to be closed down.
Considering he was supposed to be going to South Carolina and somehow another got off the bus in Savannah, Georgia,
right.
The facility is in South Carolina. There's something that's just not jiving here.
Yeah, I know. I said the same thing. I feel like something happened in between that time, too, you know. I feel like the people in the house had something to do with it. I feel like there's so many things that's just unanswered and unsaid that I would never understand it. But
Donna, do you remember the Stacy case?
Yeah. Yeah,
if they're
so
moving him around.
We're going to have to sit down and make a list of stuff.
Because
with
so
all the states involved.
If they took him off the bus and said, oh, you know what, you can't go to the facility, but we're going to take you and work you over here. What's to say if they didn't move him from here to work him there? And what's to say if he didn't move from there to work to there? And he's out there somewhere, and he don't know that mom's looking for him.
Yeah.
Because now he is, you know, slave labor.
Yeah. And you know, one thing, I say he could still be out there. He could be very well still be out there and not know himself. You know, he could be to where somebody did him something, you know what I'm saying? I mean, there's so many things that's just unsaid and undone. And there was, I mean, we did have a couple of tips, I mean, at the beginning, but like now it's nothing, like it's just a dead end, you know?
Okay. Melody, is there anything you would like to say to the people that met your son out there? Is there anything you'd like to say to your son? You've got a little over 4 minutes to say what you want to say to these people and your son.
Leroy, if you're still out there, I would wish you to come back home. We miss you. We love you. And if somebody did something to him, please come forward. Because he has two kids that really need him home.
Okay. I'm asking anybody that listens to this broadcast, if you have any information on Leroy Hargrave Jr. that took a bus in hopes to go to a rehab to get his life straightened out, the rehab called Cornerstone Hope Rehabilitation. If you know anybody that might have made contact with Leroy Hargrave, please, please call the police department, Terrebonne Parish, at 985-876-2550. His case number is 17-05-0000-2010. His name is number is 54128. He was last seen in Savannah, Georgia, working for a realtor that goes by Mr. Nick. If you know anybody in Savannah, Georgia, and they happen to know this realtor named Mr. Nick, he's more than welcome to reach out to me on Facebook under The Missing Voice or my name, Jody Newman. It's attached to The Missing Voice. But this mother deserves answers to know what happened to her son that got on a bus with the intentions of going to a drug rehab center and has never been seen again. She needs to know. She needs to know what happened to her son. And there are some people that have that absolutely have to know. Donna, is there anything you want to say real quick?
Yeah, Jody and I will help you out as best as we can. We'll get some more information. And we'll do another private call with us and try to figure out where to go next.
Okay.
And Melody, we will bring you back. We will bring you back.
Me know a lot of the information.
Okay, we will bring you back so we could do a really good story update and put all these missing pieces together with you on a show, and hopefully, you know, try to figure out where he went, and we'll do our best.
Yeah, and try to get a better case summary.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like I said, there's so many things that's unanswered and unsaid. I mean, and the people that lived in the house, they had like four different times. They changed their story so many times. And, you know, when they went for the welfare checks and stuff, they just, like, said so many different stories, you know. But everything,
are those,
they said it was okay.
Are those his children in the background?
Yeah. Yeah, they're skating right there.
All right. I want to thank everybody for coming to the show tonight. Melody, my heart breaks for you. Donna and I will do what we can to help you. We'll do some research. We'll reach out to the Perfection Renovation guy. Maybe he can put me in touch with the realtor guy. Maybe between me and Donna, we can get you some answers.
Okay. Well, thank you. I really appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay, I'm going to reach out. Was Teresa from the Savannah, Georgia Police Department, City Police Department?
Yeah, it was, that's all I know is Savannah, Georgia. It was Teresa Miles.
Okay.
I think she worked in the homicide cases and stuff, I think.
All right, I'll find her. They'll get me in touch with her. I'm going to give her a call and see what we can find out. All right, ladies.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Y'all have a blessed night. Bye-bye.
All right.
You too.
Night.